The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at weightwatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and we have another solo episode for you today. So first of all, I've been recording some exciting interviews recently. Heather Dubrow, Angie Kay, Dr. Wendy, which is fun because I feel like this summer I didn't really have that many interviews. Talent was less available. There was less on Bravo, it seemed. So it's fun to have a lot of these interviews to give to you guys. So I hope you're enjoying them. And I have to tell you, so before the Dr. Wendy interview, I obviously watched the season premiere that is coming out next Sunday for Potomac. And you know what? The season 9 premiere is pretty good. Listen, it's not Salt Lake City level, but to be honest, like nothing else could really be Salt Lake City level. I feel like that is a high bar to match, but it feels pretty close to a fresh start. It's not a complete fresh start, obviously, but it feels refreshed. There are three new faces in the group. Obviously, Candace and Robin are not there. And again, not SLC level, but it's a solid return and it makes me excited for what's to come on the season. Again, with them, obviously there's a big intrigue around Karen's DUI, which happened right before filming started. That's a big topic of conversation, as is Mia's situation with G and Inc. But there's enough else going on there. The interpersonal stuff, I think, is going to be good this season. And it just feels like the temperature has been lowered. And that's a good thing to me. I feel like things were getting too tense. There wasn't enough oxygen in the room on Potomac last season. And so I'm happy with this premiere and I'm excited for this season. So the first thing I want to talk about today is what's going on with the Roni reboot as it gears up for its second season. Because to me, as I said this several times, the OG Roni, that's a separate show. I kind of think that they should have done like Roni reboot like season one. Technically it's season 15, but to me, this is the second season of the Roni reboot. And, you know, more specifically, what I want to talk about is what's going on with Rebecca Minkoff, who is the fashion designer who joined for this upcoming season, and she'll be a friend of the cast. When it was first announced, there was an excitement that, like, you know, Roni was getting another recognizable name on the cast. You know, we could pair her with Jenna Lyons. These are two well-known names in fashion. They're two big New York names. And, you know, it was an exciting prospect. I was excited about it. But it's becoming pretty clear to me that we can't expect the same level of authenticity from Rebecca that we get from Jenna. And I say this for a few reasons. When she was first announced, people immediately were like, oh my God, she's a Scientologist. She shouldn't be on the show. Why are they platforming her? Which gets back to something that I find really annoying about certain fans of these shows, is sort of like the moralizing of reality TV. Because if you want everybody that you watch to be somebody you agreed with, that has the same values as you, the same religious beliefs as you, the same political beliefs as you, then you're not going to get fun TV. You're not going to get entertaining television. That's not what reality TV is about. Reality TV is about disagreement and having different people in the room and learning about the human experience and studying that. And, you know, as long as she's not using her platform to like disseminate problematic beliefs or promote Scientology in a way that ignores its problematic nature and it's the terrible things that have happened as part of that cult in years past, then like I'm kind of okay with her being on the show for that reason, as long as she talks about it and is asked about it and it's not ignored, as long as it's not like some elephant in the room that's like, okay, like why are we not addressing this? If you're going to say that Roni shouldn't have Rebecca Minkoff, who is a well-known, well-celebrated fashion designer on the show because she's a Scientologist, then you need to say that Tom Cruise should never be in a movie again, Elizabeth Olsen should never act on a TV show again. There are a lot of celebrity Scientologists. That's just sort of a fact, and that's an unavoidable fact, and they're going to be getting work and projects that you're going to interact with. But I do think that it would be interesting if she had to explain it, if she had to defend it. And this is the same way I think about housewives with different political beliefs than me. I don't want to agree with everybody who I watch on reality TV. Otherwise, it would probably just be boring and predictable and frictionless, which is, to me, the diametric opposite of what kind of reality TV I want to watch. And when someone signs on, when somebody takes that risk to sign on for a reality television show where you don't get to control the narrative and you are opening yourself up to be vulnerable to questions about lifestyle choices and your past and maybe seedier associations that you've had over the years, that's a big risk. But I also think that like it's up to the other women on the show to kind of like back that up and to make sure that she's questioned about it. Because that's what I said when she signed on. If the other women knew what's good for them and how to play the game right, they'd push her on this. They'd bring up the fact that she was photographed with Danny Masterson, a fellow Scientologist. We need to see how she would defend herself and explain herself based on questions from the other women. But from the trailer, it looks like that's not going to happen. We see her and Bryn and Jessel, I think, on a helicopter, probably to the cast's first Hamptons trip, I'm guessing, where she's asked about what she wants them to say to people who ask about her Scientology connection. And she says to just say no comment, which was a big sigh. It's sort of like, okay, if that's what we're teasing in the trailer from, you know, Rebecca talking about her Scientology connection, then, like, that doesn't bode well for it to come up at any other time, to be honest. I hope I'm wrong, but if there was some sort of, like, bigger confrontation about it, I think we would have been teasing the trailer. And then earlier this week, we get another taste of sort of how this is going to be addressed via a profile of Rebecca and Elle written by friend of the pod, Evan Ross Katz. I actually reached out to him to have him on the show today to talk about her experience interviewing her and sort of, you know, talk about the Roni reboot in general, because I think that his opinion on that is pretty pertinent. But he's at Paris Fashion Week. Good for him and happy for him. So he couldn't record this week, but hopefully we can have him on the show sometime in the future to hear about that experience and to pick his brain about, you know, Roni reboot versus OG Roni. But I do want to read you a couple of passages from this profile. So first we get this paragraph. Minkoff was born in San Diego, California, the daughter of David Minkoff, an MD, and self-described, quote, alternative healthcare expert. And Sue Minkoff, a nurse. I thought I was going to be there my whole life as a little surfer, she says. The family, including Rebecca's two brothers, relocated to Clearwater, Florida in 1989, where her father was planning to take a sabbatical from his pediatric business. But she says, after, quote, one pivotal trip back to San Diego, where her brother's friends were starting to get into drugs, her parents decided to stick it out in Clearwater, where there was, quote, nothing happening but old people and the beach. Well, also, it's also where Scientology is based. Growing up, Scientology, or her, quote, applied religious philosophy, as she calls it, has helped her, quote, deal with the stress of the industry, with being better at communicating and dealing with difficult personalities. It starts and ends there with me, she says. Pressed about why she thinks there's so much fascination with celebrity Scientologists, she offers this, quote, Judaism is nearly 4,000 years old, Christianity around 2,000 years old. So look at what it took for those to become established. Scientology is new, and I think new breeds curiosity and misconception, and that's why I can only tell you what I've gotten out of it, which is a source of stress relief. Although Scientology has been the subject of public interest and controversy over the years, Housewives, Minkoff mentions, is not the arena where she felt inclined to share more on this. So, you know, I that's just a preview of how she's going to talk about this. If there are so many, quote, misconceptions about Scientology, despite, you know, reporting and documentaries and docuseries pointing out that, like, there are genuine reported factual issues with how they treat its members and what they've covered up over the years. If she thinks there's misconceptions, have her talk about it on the show. Explain what those misconceptions are, why she thinks they are misconceptions, what the truth is. To me, it's just so frustrating that, like, she just gets to say this stuff and just, like, move on. Clearly, I'm sure in this interview setup, they were sort of told to move on from the topic. Like, that's what I'm guessing. But it's just frustrating to hear this. And so clearly there are guardrails with her around this topic, which, again, is her prerogative. It's also the prerogative of the other women to push her on that. And what I'm insinuating here is that the other women are sort of respecting her wishes to cordon this off and not address this and not be pressed on this, which kind of concerns me. And maybe I'll be proven wrong again, but, like, I don't think I will be. And then there are some details about how she's approaching being on The Real Housewives of New York in general from this profile. Evan writes, Minkoff is no stranger to Bravo, having styled Heidi Klum for the first season of Project Runway and Padma Lakshmi for Top Chef. Experiences she wrote about in her 2021 book, Fearless, The New Rules for Unlocking Creativity, Courage, and Success. She went on to appear as a guest judge on several episodes of Project Runway as well. This is familiar territory then, a homecoming in a sense. But Minkoff's pronouncement that, quote, as a proponent of women, I am not interested in getting into messy, crazy drama attitude might explain why fellow housewife Saida Silva got caught on hot mic this past May calling Minkoff, quote, boring. The second worst thing you can call a housewife after, quote, dirty, low-down monkey with a wig on. Minkoff references last season's, quote, Cheesegate, a minor kerfuffle over charcuterie board, as the kind of theatrics she doesn't mind participating in, stressing that she was particular about what she went into. When I was thinking about it, I was like, the only way I can do this is by being me. And if no one likes that, then I get voted off the island. I have to go in there holding true to everything I've built. Otherwise, I look like a fraud on both sides. And you don't know who I am and you lose trust. It is not lost on me that there's a huge irony in that, but I think there's a way to play into that too. You've met my friends on the show who have things to fight about. Do you need another person doing that? Yes. Or would it be nice to have someone being like, can't we all get along? That's all well and good, but this is a show predicated on conflict and tension, Evan writes. So why cast her? Quote, it's all fake, a former Minkoff employee told Airmail in June of this year in reference to how she presents herself as a designer, and thus the intrigue and contradiction of the woman behind the brand. Two diverging roads. You pick which one to go down. There's a lot there to unpack. So the Saida Silva thing was in reference to her appearance on Jeff Lewis's show on Sirius XM, where during a commercial break, she thought her mic was off and she was asked about how Rebecca Minkoff is, and she called her boring. And this idea that, like, she has, you know, she's particular about what issues she'll wade in on. It's like, that's not how Housewives works. I'm sorry. You can't just be like, I'm only gonna weigh in on cheese board drama. I'm not gonna wade in on drama about other people's marriages or something. Like, that's not how this works. I'm not looking for that girl who sneaks into the teen bonding trust fall scene in Mean Girls who wants to make a cake full of hearts and rainbows. Nobody wants that. I don't want it to be all drama and nobody getting along. Of course not. Some of my favorite Housewives moments are funny ones where people are being silly or drunk or having a good time. Others are like emotional ones where they lean on one another for support or confide in one another in like a tough time. But I do think that those moments are much more fulfilling and rewarding when they follow moments of discord or conflict or housewives fighting or calling one another out or saying things that kind of blow up in something in their life. It's that up and down. It's like sort of that fight and make up cycle that makes housewives to me. And so if she's not willing to play that game, then like, yeah, she might get voted off the island. And at least she's aware of that. At least she's aware that she's taking that risk, that she might be a one and done. But getting along all the time and refusing to engage in conflict more serious than cheese boards is not how this franchise, this reboot, this like much heralded reboot that was a huge risk for the network, that's not how this franchise is going to succeed. And that's not going to get fans to be invested in this. Like, they need to be willing to bring it in a bigger way than this. I mean, and I really want it to succeed. I do. I believe in this reboot fundamentally. But in practice, it's leaving stuff to be desired. And it's just disappointing that, like, you know, we're adding these big new names. Great. Love that. Love that we're adding a big name to be a draw. But like, if she ends up just kind of like not engaging, then what's the point? What's she bringing to the show? And then we get this decider interview. She is asked about her dynamic with Jenna Lyons, who she says is more of a companion and there's more camaraderie there than competition. And she says, I kept joking with her. I was like, we should do fake fighting over like who's more stylish. And she was like, we're good. And I was like, but it'd be so funny if we did that. Woof. I tweeted that quote out and it got a lot of pickup. It got a lot of engagement because I think people felt really strongly about this just not being it. And this, again, this is to me is a very concerning quote. To me, it shows that Rebecca has sort of a fundamental misunderstanding about what Housewives is, how it works. It's not 2013 anymore. It is, you know, saying that arguments on Real Housewives are fake and totally phony is so a decade ago. It's such old hat. Like, yeah, it's a produced reality show. We all know this at this point. These are produced, you know, situations where they put women into a situation and that sort of the TV aspect of it, the production element of it, that to me is sort of an added layer of intrigue and makes it even more fun to dissect these shows and analyze these shows because it can be meta in that way. Like, this is actually a group of coworkers on a show who are, you know, figuring out how to present themselves and things like that. And there's friction there. But even insinuating that it would go over well to self-produce a fake fight over who's more stylish with her friend, it's just really lame. And to me, it's actually insulting to the viewership. Like, we're smarter than that at this point. And for her to not think that, for her to not realize that, it's just kind of like, okay, if that's what you think this is, then like, again, she's just not going to last in this environment. Go on the show, promote your business at its 20th anniversary, expose yourself in a new way to your core customer. That's great. And it'll probably help your business. Good for you. But you also need to play the game. And the way that I see it is that if you want the privilege of the platform, you have to play ball. And if you're not, then it's not going to be a long game for you. And maybe she's cool with that. I mean, that quote insinuated that she kind of is ready for that to potentially be her reality. Maybe she's just down to be a friend of for one season and ride that wave of sort of positive momentum that she got for her namesake brand off the back of Roni. Maybe that's fine with her. Maybe that's what she wants. That probably is what she wants. But that's not why I'm here. And that's not why most people are here. So we'll see. But having those two things back to back, does not make me very, it doesn't feel very encouraging for Rebecca Minkoff's time on Roni. Okay, so today I also want to talk about this week's Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, more specifically the new additions. I mean, you guys, the premiere was great. The premiere was 10 out of 10. As you know, last week I talked all about it. I love that episode. And this week's second episode of the season was another banger, truly. Lisa versus Angie and their fallout. I think it's going to give good TV. I mean, I'll speak more to Angie on Tuesday's episode, which will feature an interview with her, the center snowflake holder. But to me, one of her most effective qualities in terms of delivering good TV is actually her ability to get under Meredith and Lisa's skin. I love Lisa and Meredith and Angie, but the way that she bristles against them very naturally, especially this season, I think it's good for the show. Whitney, I mean, she's made a lot of people mad and she knows it and she's actually owning some of it, but she also is sort of like simultaneously unapologetic about some of it, which is an interesting dichotomy. And I'm just curious like where this goes for her. Clearly the Lisa Meredith contingent, like to this day, still doesn't seem too fond of her. She's in hot water with a lot of people, and that's a hard position to be in, but I'm just curious how she can kind of move forward with this group. And then we have Heather, who's sort of caught in the middle. I do think she proved this week that she's able to give Whitney the hard truths. And that's, to me, being a good friend. She said that she loves Whitney, but she doesn't really like her right now. But I think it's important that Heather maintains this position of being able to get through to Whitney and not completely like alienate her or go against her as they did several seasons ago. Because otherwise there won't be a strong bridge between the like Lisa Meredith contingent and the Angie Whitney contingent. So I think it's really important that Heather sort of maintains this role, at least for now. But Angie and Mary's friendship is really going to be a true gift this season, it seems like. I mean, from that entrance they made in that first episode, which was just like pure comedy, obsessed. Most of this cast makes me laugh for very different reasons, but Mary and Angie together, something about that, it's just comedic gold. I mean, Angie doesn't take herself too seriously, which is fun and makes her sort of self-aware in a different, in sort of a meta way, I think. But Mary takes herself so seriously and picks and chooses who she likes at any given time. And she also just like lets everything fly out of her mouth. And yeah, some of what she says is problematic and not okay and concerning. But it gets back to what I said earlier about like, you take the bad with the good. And she makes me laugh. And I don't agree with many things that she says, but that doesn't mean that I don't want her on my TV. She makes me laugh. And I think she definitely needs to watch some of those, especially the weight-focused comments. Like some of those are tough to hear. But, you know, I can enjoy watching somebody for the most part, but also acknowledge that they say things that aren't good and I don't agree with them. And that gets back to after my Heather Dubrow interview earlier this week, I got a 1-star review from somebody who thinks that I shouldn't be platforming Heather for being fat phobic based on, I guess, this past episode and her drama with Emily, which, by the way, I had screened the episode of OC where Heather made that comment about the dress being tight on Emily. I was sort of 1 foot in, 1 foot out while watching that episode. So I didn't pick up on that comment. I must not have been paying attention, or else I would have asked Heather about it. But saying that I shouldn't platform Heather Dubrow is ridiculous. So thanks for that 1-star review. Anyway, one of my favorite aspects of this season so far with Salt Lake City, though, is Mary's dynamic with Brittany. So we learned a lot more about Brittany this episode, and so I want to get into that. She is, again, dating the nephew of Donny Osmond, Jared Osmond. They have broken up 16 times in 8 months. He asked her to be his girlfriend recently and they went Instagram official. But then we find out that Instagram post of going Instagram official was actually just an Instagram story post, which disappears. And it was a picture of them at Costco where he called her his best friend. And side note, I did think that when that came up at the ropes course lunch they had, I thought that Whitney and Lisa were being really good friends to her by calling that into question and being like, girl, you might want to reassess this. Like that was, I'm glad they pushed up against that and were like, and they made it a point to kind of express their concerns over that. But Brittany basically like got up in front of the group. She made this toast being like, toast to the fact that he, you know, asked me to be his girlfriend. And then Mary goes, I'm just trying to figure out why do we care? First of all, the syntax of the way that she said it was amazing. And she's just so savage with Brittany. Like she hates her. And, you know, in the episode, Brittany questions why Mary is so rude to her. And Mary says, don't call me poor. That's disrespectful to God. Please, literally please. The way that her mind works is just. She also says, she's not a good listener. If you think I'm poor, ask me. But she just assumed I was. She's just not the sharpest knife in the drawer. She's not even the sharpest spoon. Not even the sharpest spoon. I mean, here's the thing. Like, Brittany wasn't insinuating that Mary's poor right now. Mary had said that, like, they struggled or something growing up. And she was like, yeah, well, I was poor too. So, like, it was clearly the wrong word choice. And Mary was sort of is directly offended by that word, poor. But I think that Brittany's intentions were genuine in trying to connect with Mary. But I'm also not surprised that Mary is hanging on to this word choice. And I think because of that, it does feel like Mary decided within like 5 seconds that she didn't like Brittany. And I think when Mary decides she doesn't like somebody, she decides she does not like somebody. We saw that with Angie last season. But also, conversely, we've seen with Angie since the reunion when Angie told her that she has lipstick on her teeth, that she can do the 180 and decide she likes you in 5 seconds. So is there hope for Brittany this season? I don't think so when it comes to Mary, but I clearly like anything is possible with Mary in terms of getting back into her good graces. So it does feel like Brittany's fighting a losing battle, but maybe there is hope. Maybe there's hope that we just don't see because it's impossible to see. But even the way they greeted each other, the ropes course, Brittany's like, Mary, how are you? And Mary's like, good, how are you? And Brittany's like, good. And then Mary goes, hope it stays that way. Their dynamic is just so good. Like, I am obsessed with it. Earlier in the episode, Brittany had gone to pickleball with Heather. And we find out that Heather met Brittany through Angie H. And she is her Mormon friend. And she tells Heather that she's only ever been single for 8 months before. She's always with a man. And Heather explains why that makes sense, sort of like from the Mormon perspective. And it's really interesting to hear. It's like, basically, Mormonism teaches that you can get into heaven without kids, but you need a man, you need a spouse, you need a husband. And so because of that, it's not uncommon in Mormonism, I guess, to sort of like disregard your children in some ways to focus on your partner. It sounds like the partner comes before the kids. And so that's why Brittany says, like, I have a bad relationship with my kids. And I've always picked a man over them, which is fucked up. I mean, it's crazy, but like, that's sort of what she's always been taught, I guess. And we find out she's been divorced twice, and she actually originally got with Jared because his ex-fiance got with her husband and they commiserated together and then ultimately got together. Yeah. And then later on at the ropes course, we find out that because she sort of has picked these men over her kids, her two daughters aren't speaking with her. Like they're not on speaking terms, which then like doubles down Mary's dislike of Brittany because it triggers her. And we find out that from Mary that like when growing up, her mom was always sort of like chasing men and picking men over them. And, you know, they didn't always have something to eat. They were always sort of like wandering and kind of left to their own devices. So that actually makes sense to me that Mary kind of feels some type of way about how Brittany has sort of chosen men over her kids, but she already didn't like her for more superficial reasons. So yeah, anyway, side note, I'm glad that we're getting to learn more about Mary. I feel like in season one, we learned a lot about Mary, but now that she's a full-time housewife again, I hope that we get to learn more about Mary's backstory, kind of even outside of all the church stuff, even like before that. Like I do want to know more about her. Mary's such a specific person. She's such an enigma. And so learning more about her background will help explain her a little bit more, I think. Anyway, it feels like there's a lot more to come from Brittany. It's going to get complicated for Heather. I mean, as the group kind of continues to bristle against her, I think Heather's going to choose Brittany's side when it comes to the Bronwyn little feud that's kind of brewing. But when Meredith goes against her, I mean, Heather and Meredith are super close, and we see Meredith yelling at her at the beginning of the first episode about secretly recording people. So I'm curious how Heather will handle that down the road. It's going to get complicated for her. But overall, I really think that production and the group are doing a really great job kind of handling these newbies. I've criticized Orange County for how sort of Katie has entered the group. I do like Katie as a person. She seems great and she's an interesting story. But she came in way too strong with this Heather stuff, picking up on some old drama from last season and that which she wasn't involved in. And she's just like, she won't, to quote Sutton Strack, let the mouse go with this paparazzi gate stuff. I mean, she's still talking about it in the press and saying that she has more receipts that she's not going to drop. I think that she kind of attached herself to that storyline and that feud way too quickly, and it sort of defined her. And it's going to be hard for her to sort of dig herself out of that hole. I think she's starting to do it. But that's when you think that she's going to fully do it, she brings it back up. And so I think they kind of was mishandled on OC by Katie and probably a little bit by production. But they're doing a great job on Salt Lake City. I mean, this is how you do it. I mean, Maylee, not so much. I keep seeing comments that she sort of might get edited out mid-season and she didn't really work with the group. Apparently, she has said some problematic things in resurfaced comments online. Unclear if that has anything to do with what we'll see on the show from her. But to me, she's still kind of a big question mark. She's like referenced and she's at these group events, but I don't feel like her introduction has really made sense so far. But to me, Bronwyn is great. I mean, we do find out a lot more about Bronwyn in this episode too, which makes her even more legit. I mean, this woman is rich. Her husband is the former CEO of Palm, as in Palm Pilot, as in like kind of the OG BlackBerry. Like, I mean, my dad had Palm Pilots, and I, for one, wanted one of those growing up. When I was like 8 years old, I really wanted a Palm Pilot with like that little pen stylus thing, as if I had like emails to check. But like, there were definitely games on there and you could draw on there. I really wanted one of those. I didn't get a cell phone until I was 13, but I really wanted the Palm Pilot. Never got one. Somebody replied on Twitter to me that he also might have been the CEO of HP. So like, there's real tech money there. And now he's in private equity. There's no like keeping up with the Joneses happening here. It sounds like they kind of are the Joneses. We also found out more about her daughter, Gwen. She's actually from a previous relationship, and Brahma got pregnant with her when she was 19. And that was when she was at BYU. And she actually replied to somebody on Twitter. This person, Sarah Says, S0, said, "I'm kind of surprised Bronwyn was, quote, allowed to keep her baby after she got pregnant at BYU. I've heard so many stories about young women who were sent away to hide their pregnancy and then told adoption was the only option they had." She replied saying, "This is exactly what happened to me, but I fought it. It wasn't easy, and I'm not saying adoption isn't right for many, but I did have to fight this exact scenario," which is wild. I mean, that's the kind of thing that they were talking about in Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, I feel like. And so that's, God, there's so much darkness in Mormonism. I would love to know more about this. And I would also love to know more about Brahman's relationship to Mormonism and sort of, you know, if she's had these sort of traumatic experiences, how has that affected her faith and her relationship to the church? I don't know. But to me, like, overall, Bronwyn, generally, she's sparring with people very naturally. She's asserting herself in a way that feels fairly authentic. You know, Heather called her out at the ropes course lunch, and she kind of held her own in defending herself. I mean, Heather says that she's basically playing both sides with Whitney and Lisa. Angie says that, you know, it's okay for her to have a change of heart about somebody. And then Bronwyn points out that she doesn't think that Lisa, the person who brought her into this group, defended her enough in that moment. I thought that she did a little bit, but I think that's sort of a brewing fracture that we're going to see going forward. And I also like love that she went to Angie's salon, which, by the way, side note, it's very savvy that Angie is filming kind of more pivotal scenes at her salon this season after it was sort of called into question last season. Very smart of her. Very savvy pointing that out. But yeah, I think Bronwyn is smart, and she's real, and she's grounded, and she's operating in a way that I mostly really like. So I'm excited about her. I really am. I mean, she has this brewing fruit with Brittany too, and she has this great line. I don't even know if she can spell YSL. Not Yves Saint Laurent, but just YSL. And that she came for her at that ropes course lunch. Brittany's really getting it from all sides, I have to say. And you know what? She might be the sort of punching bag right now, but it's making for great TV. And it's honestly, she's kind of made for TV, in my opinion. So good for her for kind of going through it. Okay, so the last thing I want to touch on today is Alexis Bellino's recent Instagram statement. You know, she took to Instagram, and I'll read it in a second, but it sort of reflects what both Jennifer Pedranti and Heather Dubrow had told me in my interviews with them in recent weeks. I mean, I think take anything that Alexis says with a grain of salt right now. She kind of has her back up against the wall, but she posted a photo of herself with the song attached, Kelly Clarkson's What Doesn't Kill You Makes You Stronger, which, can we stop adding songs to static Instagram posts? That's a topic for another day. But she wrote, "I just want to let everyone know that what you're seeing in my career is not real." I think it's really funny that she referred to the show as her career. Interesting, considering that she just returned to the show for the first time in years. But it's not the truth, she says. "There has been so much left out intentionally to paint me in a bad light. It's okay. I'll take one for the team to get ratings for this business, but I will live in truth and I will bring the truth. Whatever I have to do here on my Instagram page, or if this career I choose decides to bring the truth out, either way, it will come out. And you will also see the true Alexis, because what you're seeing on your TV right now is not me. I love you all, and I do not hate you for hating me, because I would hate me too if I were you. But hang tight. I'll be speaking the truth after every episode of what has been left out intentionally to paint me as someone I don't even know. It will actually intrigue you all." In parentheses, "Live recaps of the truth starting from episode one coming ASAP on my Instagram." So it sounds like we'll be getting Instagram lives or posts that will address things that I guess were left on the cutting room floor. I will say, I am intrigued by this. I mean, again, grain of salt with what she's saying. But I do think it has to be some truth in the fact that, like, she talked about other things or filmed other things that were just not included in the show. I mean, that happens all the time, but it does feel extreme that she's talking literally only about John Jansen and Shannon the entire time. And I will say, obviously, what she is saying about John Jansen and Shannon is beyond. I mean, we don't have to get into that. We've talked about that a lot on the show, but like, nobody put those words in her mouth. Nobody did these things for her. She did these things. She acted this way. But it obviously would have gone down differently if there were other things balancing it out, I think. Maybe not. I mean, maybe not. But maybe this is kind of a moot point. But Emily and Gina did do an interview with Bryce Sander at ET this week where they responded to this post. And they were basically like, I mean, we've been on the show for 6 years and we have never once complained about the edit or called production unhappy about something. So they basically are calling BS on this. And the fact that they said like call production insinuates to me that something I've heard about Alexis is true, which is that she has been calling production. I've heard that before. And so for them to sort of insinuate that, it sort of means that that's been happening this season. And that means that Alexis is really unhappy about how this is all playing out. And it's not what she expected this return to be. I also think that it's interesting. Have you noticed that every time that Alexis brings up her kid in relation to like the LGBTQ community and how like, you know, relating to Heather over both having queer kids, she's never really specific about it. And to me, that means that she didn't have clearance to talk specifically about her trans child, which is something that obviously, I mean, it's been celebrated in the media and on social media. And that is something that I wish that she could speak more directly to. I think it's pretty clear that she's not allowed to. That maybe would have endeared her to more people if she could have gotten into more specifics there. I don't think any of this excuses her behavior. I just think that like something, I mean, clearly a lot was left on the cutting room floor. I just don't think that I think both things can be true. I think that she can be acting like sort of a clown on this show. And also there can be things that maybe would have added more color to her story. But yeah, I'm really curious how she is in this upcoming reunion in particular. Like, is this going to be a one and done return for her? I simultaneously hope yes and no, because she is such a lightning rod and conversation starter. And there really is, if you think about it, there's only one way for her to go right now, which is up. I don't know if that's possible, but if there's any direction that she can go, it is that way. I don't know. We'll see. It's just wild to me that Heather and Jen would die on this hill if there really was nothing redeeming about Alexis. You know what I mean? Like, I generally trust Heather's judgment, and Jennifer, like, I really like her. So I'm curious. It's interesting to me that they're still really defending her and kind of going with this sort of point of view on how Alexis is coming across as well. But yeah, that's sort of my general thoughts right now. If she's going to go on Instagram after every episode and say different things, like, that also gives a lot of fodder for the reunion to be either like, you know, shut down or responded to. And also, like, she's kind of directly coming from production too. So like, that's not helping her case, honestly. Like, she's gonna basically blame the edit and say there's all the stuff that's being left out and that's why I'm getting bullied online and coming across so badly on TV. That's accusing production. And accusing production is also not the way to go. I'm not sure the future is bright for Alexis, but who knows, you guys? Who knows? All right, that's all for today. Thank you so much for listening to Gabbing with Gib. I'd love a positive review or a 5-star rating wherever your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with a couple of exciting interviews next week with Dr. Wendy and Angie K, as well as a state of the Real Housewives franchises with a great guest. So thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gib Sonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson John. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.
How many discounts does USAA auto insurance offer? Too many to say here. Multi-vehicle discount, safe driver discount, new vehicle discount, storage discount, legacy.
How many discounts will you stack up? Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/auto discounts. Restrictions apply.